Welcome back to the Responsible Luxury Podcast, everybody. This is your host, Lauren Petrovic, founder of Laurenti New York. I hope you all had a wonderful and relaxing summer. I'm definitely excited to be back in New York and get back into the full swing of things. If you're new here, I'm thrilled to have you join us. On this show, I have the pleasure of sitting down with some of the most remarkable leaders shaping the world of luxury today. In today's episode, my guest is the incredible powerhouse Katrina, co-founder and CEO of Arete. In case you're not familiar, Arete is the latest AI-powered marketplace for emerging designers, offering a personalized shopping experience for the best products around the world. Beyond being a fashion tech platform, Arete is a brand and community bridging the gap between the digital realm and the real world of fashion. I'm particularly excited about this episode for several reasons, one being the personal journey behind Arete and its significance in the fashion industry.
I had this inkling of what I was passionate about, and I knew that there was kind of an opportunity. You know, sometimes you just get this feeling, this instinct that there's something happening.
During our conversation today, Katrina shares insights on the fashion tech startup scene in New York, strategies for raising capital, the value of community building in the early stages of your company, and tips for acquiring your initial user base. All valuable insights for anybody, especially for budding entrepreneurs. Katrina and I first met at a Fashion Week event last year, and since then, Laurenti has collaborated with Arete on pop-ups and various exciting New York City events. Getting to know Katrina has been a huge pleasure and inspiration, and this episode gives you a glimpse of her authenticity and ambitious vision for the future. One of the things I love most about speaking with fellow founders is hearing about their aspirations and capturing those conversations on platforms like this podcast. I think about it's almost like creating a timeless digital archive for their stories and inspirations that I hope will resonate for many years to come. You can check out Arete on the App Store by searching for Arete Fashion, and you can also follow them on Instagram and TikTok at Arete_AI. That's Arete_AI. Links for these platforms will be provided in the show notes below. So without further ado, get ready to dive into this insightful, strategic, and engaging conversation with the incredible Katrina. Please enjoy. Hi, Katrina.
Hey, Lauren. How are you?
I'm great. How are you?
Doing well. Excited to be here. Thanks for having me.
Yes, I'm excited too. You are the first fashion business leader on the pod, so I'm excited to open things up and expand beyond what we were discussing before, which was really heavy on the jewelry industries, and also excited to learn more about you and your journey into Arete and learn more about all the exciting initiatives you guys are working on.
Yeah, excited to chat and very honored to be the first fashion technology company.
So jumping right in, can you tell us a little bit about your experience growing up and then coming to New York leading up to where we are today?
Oh man, how much time do we have? It's such a long journey, Lauren. So I'm originally from Lithuania. I was born there. My mom actually won a green card after the USSR collapsed. And so she came over here first. And she came to Chicago. And then after some time, she came and got me. So I spent my initial years in Lithuania with my grandparents. And I have a very big, amazing family in Lithuania. So it was one of those things where everyone was having a hand in raising me. It was like, my aunt is my mom, my cousin's my mom, my grandma's my mom, everyone's my mom. And then I came to Chicago and my mom and I, you know, she was a single mom with me and had a whole journey and a whole life there that I won't get into now, but definitely a lot in that backstory. And it was a very, I would say, transformative time in my life, even though I didn't realize it at that moment because I was so young. But I think those experiences that I had with my mom being an immigrant, really watching her work two jobs just to put food on the table, honestly. Watching that and learning from her and her strength was really something that I've taken with me into my adult years. And I always loved fashion. Some of my earliest memories were of the two of us going to children's clothing stores and playing dress up, or her buying something new for me. And then she leaves for a moment and she comes back and it's completely destroyed. I cut it up. I've redone it. And she's like, well, now you have completely wrecked your entire wardrobe. And I'm like, what are you talking about? I just made it better. And so, yeah, always very entrepreneurial. And then I ended up going to Georgetown for undergrad and for my master's. I always knew in my heart that I would be an entrepreneur. My first air quote company was in third grade, which was a whole story in itself. And I just loved building and innovating and creating. And I love this intersection of the arts and business, trying to figure out what can I do in life that will really generate impact. So when I got to Georgetown, I was actually in the School of Foreign Service, which sounds wild and totally unrelated. But in reality, I was on the international business side of things. After my master's, I was securing deals overseas. I had a lot on my plate and I was picking up a lot of skills that I now use in building the company, everything from the fundraising to the business development to how do you actually sell? How do you tell a story? How do you build a team? A lot of those skills I picked up in the international business world as well, and always loved fashion. For me, the intersection of passion and talent coming together.
So growing up, your upbringing, I think that's a commonality a lot of entrepreneurs have, because when you're raised in an environment where it's a really hardworking family, you develop this sense of agency and independence and seeing the world in a way where you learn a lot of important skills early on, like resourcefulness, of course, determination, more the creativity, like you said, with the fashion and redesigning your clothes when you're younger. I think that's a very fascinating core tenet of entrepreneurs. And I also love the fact that going to school in Georgetown, you're in DC, it's a very diplomatic and very international, very political area. The interesting mix between international business and fashion and now tech is a very interesting ecosystem that you have dove into. But I'm curious to know, when was the point where you decided to take a step and develop this new fashion tech company? What were you thinking around that time?
I mean, I think ignorance is bliss. I stand by that. Exactly, delusion. I think, you know, I just truly always loved fashion. Like, it was just, so I always had a Vogue subscription. I was always trying to find all these events to go to. Yeah. I just really wanted, even freshman year of undergrad, I applied for an internship with Bloomingdale's. And I was like, I just want to be in this world. But I didn't really know. I truly just had no idea how I would fit into it. And I didn't know if it was just kind of a childhood dream. Like, how am I going to make a real career and a real living out of it? I had no other examples of that being done. So I would say it was funny, though, because my memories go back to where in high school, I was in detention almost every day, not because I did anything bad per se, but I had a uniform and I accessorized the shit out of my uniform. Like, to the point where I would walk into school and the teachers were like, you are not in dress code. I was like, but technically I am. They're like, no, detention. But you don't understand. This is me expressing myself. And I remember even when I was an undergrad, I never left my dorm without being dressed to the nines. And I got so much, I mean, either hate or love, right? Like, it goes both ways. Some people are like, what is wrong with you? Why are you like, why is it 9 a.m. Arabic class and you look like you're going to like a gala? Or, you know, or people are like, respect. So it kind of goes both ways. But again, I just always really loved this industry. It's who I am as a person. And I was working this very intense job. And it was an idea in some sense that I've had since I was a kid. It was something that I just remember even as a child closing my eyes and looking at my closet or looking at clothing online and thinking, wow, like, I just want magic with clothes. Like, I want to snap my fingers and have the perfect clothes appear. I want just, this is the system. I want this to feel like magic. And it really stuck in my brain as I got older, that idea of making magic happen And obviously technology now is an enabler of some of that magic. And it stuck in my mind as I got older. And I remember it was, 2022. And I was flying to Europe every single month for my other job. And I had gone through something. I'd gone through a very painful breakup. And I went to Ecuador for a couple months because I climb. I love mountaineering and high altitude climbing. So I was like, what better way to cope than to go to Ecuador for 2 months and just climb in the mountains or the volcanoes on the weekends. And then when I got back from that, it was on New Year's Day. And I remember this so distinctly. It was New Year's Day. I was sitting at dinner in New York City with my friends at a table, and we were all going around saying, what was our New Year's resolution? And I said, this year I'm launching my company. And I had no idea what that company was. I had this inkling of what I was passionate about. And I knew that there was kind of an opportunity. Like, you know, sometimes you just get this feeling, this instinct that there's something happening. And it almost felt like, in many ways, why me, right? Of all people, I'm not like I studied fashion. I didn't go to F. And it was kind of this, I say, delusion, truly, where I was just in the moment. I just thought, all right, you know what? I care enough about it. This is a problem that I feel very deeply. And I know a lot of other people in my demographic. I may not have an engineering background. I didn't go to FIT, but I understand this space because this solution needs to be built for other women and men in my demographic who just love fashion and who struggle with the modern day pains of modern marketplaces.
So there's a lot of things I want to jump into there. One of is when you were sitting down at dinner in New York and you just had a switch and you decided, you had this that feeling. It's this intuitive, very calming wave, and you don't know exactly what it is, but it's like you turn on that switch and then all the opportunities start to come your way. It's really an incredible magic in a way. And especially it's being able to trust that and lead into that. I always say there's three or four opportunities that are going to majorly change your life. And when you trust that inkling, I mean, that's when life really starts to unfold for you. And clearly it did for you. And it's like having that determination is remarkable.
Yeah. I think it's also one of those things where when you say something out loud, you're held accountable.
Yeah.
Big of the moment. Because I am a woman of my word. Like I really, really do my best to make sure that if I say something's going to happen, it happens. Yeah. And so I try not to overpromise things if I can't follow through on them. And so it's the same mindset I take to when I say I'm going to accomplish something. I very much say it out loud to people, and then I know I have no way out. It has to happen.
When you decided you were going to start this company, did you have your co-founder, did you guys know each other? How did this all start to unfold after that dinner?
Yeah, well, co-founder dynamics are hard. And it's definitely something that typically, in an ideal world, you have an idea with someone you really want to work with, and then you go from there. For me, it definitely wasn't like that. I started things out. It was a lot of ups and downs, a lot of different types of turnover. It was definitely a very rough start. It was a very hard part of the journey. I would say the first 7-8 months were really just chaotic. I just had no idea what I was doing, trusted the wrong people, the whole gambit. But Cassie and I met, so we went to Georgetown together, and then we got reintroduced by a mutual friend, and we really hit it off, and we started talking, and it was really around the time when I decided to go and test my luck in life. And she was thinking about going to business school. And so we started having conversations, but I started working on the company, kicking things off. And she was really on board more on an advisory type of role and giving feedback and thoughts. And then she started working with the company more intensely towards end of the summer of 2023. And so now she's a founding member. And then my co-founder, direct co-founder, is MJ, who is also our CTO. And we met at a fashion sustainability event. And it was one of those things where when we met, it was so funny because she is a brilliant machine learning engineer, right? Also one of the most fashionable people I know. And we met at this fashion sustainability event. And I told her about what I was working on. And she goes, wait, I just went on, I forgot what it was. She's like, I just went on like a 10-hour walk all over Manhattan. And I decided that exactly what you're talking about is what I want to do with the rest of my life and what I want to build. And I was like, really? Like, how did we happen to meet of all times at the perfect moment, honestly? And it was someone who already was thinking in this direction or doing something in this space in a very similar way. And it was just, it honestly felt like the stars aligned there for us. And yeah. It took some time for us to really start fully working together, right? I think there's a common misconception that you meet someone and then you start working together and testing things out. But in reality, it takes time to build those relationships, whether it was with Cassie or MJ. We've been building those relationships for well over a year, really, before we jumped into things. And yeah, it takes time. And even then, life happens. So yeah, I'm very grateful for both of them. We have an amazing team. And I feel very, very lucky to be able to be building this company with them.
When you guys first met, were you guys internalizing it and thinking about the way it is built out today? Or did you pivot at all? Did you have a different variation of what the original idea was? Or is that core idea always the same?
Yeah. So when I first started at the end of 2022, for early 2020, as just an idea, there was definitely more of the styling component to it. And even most of last year, that held true. When MJ and I met, that was definitely part of the narrative, the story. And then honestly, recently, in the last couple months, we've gone through a pretty dramatic pivot at the company. We've basically scrapped the entire styling anything piece. We've decided that for various reasons, one of them being, what is our niche? What are we really good at? Where is the white space in the industry? Doing a lot of research, understanding our strengths, understanding what is our target demographic? What is their real problem? So doing a lot of that type of internal analysis, looking at the data, based on that, we made our pivot, or directional refocusing pivot, however you want to call it. But yeah, I think we've gone through a lot of pivots in the process, but this one was probably the biggest one because we essentially cut off we changed the narrative. We changed like the story, the pitch, the website, like we changed a lot and we did it very smoothly. So no one's really noticed too dramatically, but it definitely has changed the trajectory of the company in a very positive way. So Arete today is a personalized discovery platform for emerging designers globally. And we leverage machine learning to generate recommendations of items based on each individual's style preferences, their evolving tastes, as well as trending aesthetics. And we have a whole process in the back end of how we're actually capturing aesthetics. How are we leveraging knowledge graphs to do that? How are we actually training our models to understand different occasions as well as different user preferences, capturing that implicit and explicit feedback? But the core of the company is really tied to these emerging designers. And we noticed that as a company, that's where we're the most passionate. We noticed there are so many amazing creatives out there in the world. And for us to be able to build a platform, a technology, a community that really helps elevate their product, their stories, is something that we find is really lacking in the market. And we want to be able to serve that because the designers we work with, from the very beginning, we've been working with emerging brands, but we didn't realize that actually this is the story. Emerging designers are the core of Arete. That is the core of this company. Yeah. And when we really understood that and leaned into that, we realized that we're not necessarily targeting every single person out there. We're targeting the people who really love fashion. They want to find the best products. They don't want to dress like everyone else. They care a bit more. And for us, those are the people we want to work with. Those are the people we want to serve. And the designers are incredible. Like, I feel so lucky, Lauren, yourself included. Like, Laurenti is a beautiful, beautiful brand. And I just feel so lucky to be able to be inspired by the people we work with. And I know it's only going to grow and expand from here. So I can't wait to see where we'll be in 5-10 years.
How I look at it is, Arete is this beautiful ecosystem that you guys are creating to house these emerging designers in this and giving them a platform to launch, bridging that gap between consumers and buyers and collectors, collecting these emerging designers. It's definitely the future of shopping. So I'm curious to talk more technically about inside of the company, how the AI models work inside of the app. So Could you tell us from a high level how you guys train these AI models?
Yeah. So we have our own data. So we train everything in-house. So we're not using like GPT. We're not using like a wrapped approach. So we are training all of our own models. And there's a couple of pieces to it. One is, you know, we have our own data that we've been pulling. It is a combination of brand partner items as well as data from brands that are maybe future partners. And so we can pull and scrape that data. And then we've built our own taxonomy on the back end. And so that taxonomy, there's objective data and then there's subjective data when it comes to fashion. We've trained our own classification models on a lot of that objective data. And now we're working through subjective data and different solutions to how do we actually automate the tagging process of some of those products with subjective data that is ultimately evolving a lot, right? I mentioned trending aesthetics. So how do you make sure that you can tag office siren one day and then what is it like coastal cowgirl the next day,
yeah.
Right? Like those are constantly evolving aesthetics and that's how people are thinking about fashion. So you need to have a system in place that is really adaptable to those aesthetics. So we have our own data sets, pulling data from partners as well as what's out there. We have a styling team in-house that initially was really hands-on with a lot of the tagging and providing some of that input, that verification, that human element to verify products. And then user engagement too. So how does personalization work? It's the user's implicit and explicit feedback in the app. So on the back end, we have more of a ranking system. And as our users engage on the app, as they provide, whether it be explicit feedback by liking a photo or implicit feedback by clicking on an item, we're able to further enhance and understand your preferences. So that's another element to it. And then something we're working through now and are in the process of kind of building out and exploring is, as you put in your Instagram username, can we, with that information, pull an understanding of some of the Instagram accounts that are more fashion focused that you're following, and then based on the images, so primarily computer vision focused, understand some of those trending aesthetics that are emerging from those photos. And based on those trending aesthetics, can we then actually basically build a knowledge graph to input those aesthetics into a ret to make sure that they're, you know, rapidly evolving, but also automating the process of tagging which items from thousands of products go under an office siren aesthetic. So there's a lot there. And MJ, I hope I made her proud with this explanation. she is definitely better equipped to explain all this than I am. But at a high level, those are some of the pieces of the puzzle.
It's a beautiful marriage between creativity and then this high-tech AI to create this emerging experience. For any of the listeners, if you haven't downloaded the Arete app yet, go ahead and download it on the App Store. You will see that the way they set up the feed is very similar to an Instagram where it's a very shoppable look. So they're rolling out with some next level experiences for the fashion industry. So with that, I wanted to dive more into the New York tech scene and also the fashion community as well, because you're in business development, you're out there fundraising money. So you're talking to a lot of intelligent investors with the tech community, but then you also have your hands in the fashion scene. So what unique aspects or challenges have you observed while working in the community?
Yeah. Yeah. I feel so fortunate because I really am straddling so many different worlds.
Yeah.
It's so cool because on one side, we're very immersed in the emerging fashion scene in New York, right? Like we work with showrooms, we work with PR companies. We're working now a bit more with like the CFDA. Yeah. And then on the other side, I'm also very immersed in the tech scene in New York. I know so many founders. I know so many B2B SaaS founders. And so it's really cool to straddle these different worlds that typically don't intersect a ton or haven't historically. I would say one thing that I find really special about the New York fashion tech scene is it is just, it's growing, one, and the women who are in it are absolutely crushing it. Like these companies that are coming up right now, and I could name them, there's Alternu, there's Rodeo, there's Teleport, there's PS Collective. Like these are all amazing companies that are emerging, and I absolutely adore every single one of these women. Everyone is so supportive. We have a group chat on WhatsApp called it's like a fashion tech group chat where we just add more and more founders in the space because it's really hard because it's a competitive space, one, sure, but two, you know, as more of these companies are started, a lot of them are led by really talented, smart, ambitious women. But the fundraising climate, we could go down a whole rabbit hole about why less than 2% VC funding goes to females.
Yeah.
You know, it definitely is a skewed system, no matter how you frame the story. Like, it just is, right? There are preconceived notions, biases have developed over years. That's inevitable. And so I think for us, what's cool is having this ecosystem that is very supportive. I feel very fortunate to have amazing entrepreneurial women in my life who are building in the space, but also outside of the space. I think there are some really great founder communities in New York City. And sure, you know, it's not at that level maybe yet, but also it's a very different type of entrepreneurship. I think SF is great if you're a B2B SaaS company, but if you're a consumer-facing company, there's a reason Goat went to LA and not SF. Right. Like if you're a consumer facing company, New York is amazing, especially if you're in fashion or anything that is at the intersection of technology and culture. I think New York is an amazing startup scene, tech scene for those types of startups.
I want to expand more into the fundraising experience for you, especially earlier on in your journey a couple of years ago for a rate. When you guys first started fundraising, how has that whole experience been for you? I know it's a real thing for female founders to be faced with definitely more challenges and adversity when it comes to raising capital. So what has been your initial challenges and hurdles that you overcome? And I'm sure it's also made you more tenacious as a person too. So walk us through that journey for yourself.
Yeah. So basically all of 2023, we bootstrapped the company, right? It's hard to bootstrap. Not even just from a financial standpoint, but also the resources that you get. It's hard to scale and to move really quickly when you're scrapping things together. So it's definitely tough. I was taking money from one job and then putting it into Arete. So I was a little funnel of income that was going into the company. And then we closed an angel investment at the end of 2023 that was significant enough to allow me to quit my other job. And so then I was able to go full-time on the company. And then in the process, we've closed a handful of significant enough angel checks. And that's allowed us to continue forward. And it's been, I think, for us, in a way, a blessing in disguise, because it's allowed us to have just enough resources to refine, to expand, to test, but not so much that we throw a bunch of money at the problem and then all of a sudden money's gone and the solution you built doesn't work. So I think for us, it's forced us to still be very scrappy with how we're building. And we've iterated. We have new versions launching every couple of weeks. We're constantly iterating. I'm absolutely still not happy with it, right? Like, I think we have such
You're
a long
never
way to
fully go. Satisfied as a founder.
Oh my gosh, we have such a long way to go. Like, I find bugs every single day. So even from the user experience side, like, such a long way to go. But the good thing is that we have been making those decisions with data, and because we have focused more on these like angel investments to this point, it's not like we could throw millions at it and then just kind of go from there. We've taken the time, and that's given us the ability to also build out a community in New York City. It's something that we realized is really valuable to us as a brand, because at the end of the day, it's a fashion technology company, but it's also a community. And I didn't even realize the strength of this when Arete first started, but I've realize this more and more, and we're really leaning into this as well, is we have this growing presence in New York with the founders, the designers, the creators and influencers and the users. And it's something that we're able to facilitate through our events and through a lot of these activations that we do around New York. And so for us, we're very much on the side of let's continue to do these, let's lean into it, let's make Arete more than just a technology company, let's make it a brand, and let's make it a community, and let's make it something that feels like the intersection of the digital and the real. And so I think if we didn't go this angel route in the beginning and the scrappy route in the beginning, maybe that would not have emerged in the process, because that really emerged as almost a need in the moment of being like, we need to do something. We have limited funding. How do we acquire users, honestly, in the very beginning, right? Like, okay, maybe we try events. And then from there, snowballed. And we realized that actually this is more than just, this is not anything really to do with acquisition so much as it is growing this base and this loyal community that we have in New York City. Yes, we are kicking off a more like formal round in the fall. We're still taking angel investments for the next probably a month and a half or so. And then all funds and VCs are on vacation in the summer. So usually you kick that off in the fall. It's a good time. So that's our timeline.
Finding opportunities when you're faced with any type of challenge, right? I always think there's a small seed of opportunity in there. And it's almost like a blessing in disguise. Of course, when you're in it, you're bootstrapping and you're figuring out, how do I grow this? How do I get more customers? And I think this is important for early stage founders to understand, is if you go out and you, like you said, just throw money, write a check and try to solve your problems, that's not a sustainable way of building up the company, because those core problems earlier on, the earlier you figure out those problems is the farther you're going to go. Speaking to early stage founders in any industry that people are looking to tackle, what's a good piece of advice that you have for them? Maybe it's something that you've discovered yourself, or a good piece of advice someone has given you.
Yeah. So two pieces of advice that have been coming to my mind a lot recently: short-term pessimist, long-term optimist. Yeah. I think it's very important to always be confident in yourself, the company, people you're working with, and know that you will get to that end goal. But understand that the end goal will likely look very, very different than what you think it will look like today. And also understand, I think the short-term pessimist, you're always planning doomsday in the short term. In the short term, it's everything is on fire. Nothing is working. You can't be too happy, I think, in the short term. I think in the short term, you have to almost just always have a fire under your ass. But understand still that long term, you don't waver. Long term, there is no doubt that this will succeed. So I think having that mindset grounds me a little bit, and it allows me to keep my head screwed on correctly. At least I try, maybe not. You can ask MJ, maybe she disagrees. And then I think another piece of advice that recently has really stuck with me is, it's a Chinese proverb about, if you chase two rabbits, you'll lose both, so only chase one rabbit. Mm-hmm. And as we've been going through this pivot, I keep trying to come back to that, because I could have a natural personality where I want to chase three or four or five rabbits, and I'm like, I want to catch them all. So I think it's been a really good learning for me to always, especially with this pivot, to be like, okay, we're chasing one rabbit. Like, let's just catch this one rabbit. And then from there, we can find the others.
That in itself is two really good pieces of advice, especially the second one too, because I feel like, especially in New York, you are so overwhelmed by so many opportunities around you. And it's trying to decipher which one is going to help me get to where I'm trying to go, because there's always opportunity around you no matter where you are, but it's trying to pick out the best one. Don't try to jump from step one to step seven. Try to go sequentially. So shifting gears a bit, to challenges and opportunities for the fashion tech industry. In your view, what unique challenges or opportunities do you see for emerging AI in the fashion industry, especially when it comes to personalized recommendations and trend forecasting?
Yeah. So challenges, I would say, specifically in the fashion tech space, I think a lot of companies are going after the virtual try-on space right now. A lot of companies are building there, and some companies are further ahead than others. I think a big challenge for something like that is consumers are not going to do any work, right? I think that if we assume that someone's going to stand in front of a mirror and take a photo of themselves and then upload it and get their 3D rendering of their body, you might say you will, but you probably won't, right? Anything that requires you to do work is going to be really hard from the consumer side. It's also why there's so many companies that try to do the whole digital closet thing, upload your closet. And it's a really hard, anytime you have to ask a user or a consumer to do work, it just adds a whole layer of complexity. Yeah. And so I think the virtual try-on space is going to have to figure out that problem. I could see, obviously, in the more retail world where you have those mirrors and there's a much easier connection for the user or the shopper to make between a virtual try-on. But I think that'll be a challenge. And then I think some other challenges that will emerge, I think data is going to be a challenge. We're already experiencing that, right? We pivoted for many reasons, but one of them is there's just not enough data for us to be able to tell a story of, hey, we are using machine learning to generate looks for you, right? Like in reality, no, you're not. Like, I mean, if you are, please reach out to me and let me know where you got your data, because I'd be so curious to know. But it's a very hard problem to solve there, unless you have millions and millions of users who are providing that feedback and then they're serving as a data source. And so I think a lot of challenges in fashion will just be related to gaps in data. And then some opportunities, I think the opportunities get me really excited. There's so many. I mean, everything from, again, visual search engines to being able to aggregate information about different purchase behaviors for shoppers at specific types of stores, and then being able to predict supply chains or being able to predict production cycles for the next year out based on your specific target customer. Mm-hmm. Or even, we talked about virtual try-ons, but there's also the metaverse and virtual realities. And those are all really exciting and fun to think about, especially as Apple and Meta have really piqued the interest in terms of VR and AR experiences. And so obviously, I don't think that's going to be coming up to people's lives, to daily lives in the very near term. But I definitely see it as a direction that the industry will likely go in, at least probably sooner than the next decade. And then I think there's also a lot with AI search engines for fashion. I think there's Julie Bornstein just raised $50 million for Daydream, which is the AI search engine. I think that will be really interesting to see how that develops. And then ultimately, how are these larger companies, marketplaces, or even retailers, how will they adopt new technology in a seamless way? How will they integrate these technologies into their systems, right? So I think something we think about a lot is we do the whole personalization thing. Essentially, it's like a trend forecasting using external data. And so I think technology, what it's going to do, specifically machine learning, is it's going to make the fashion world a lot more efficient, a lot more automated. AI is not a solution in itself, right? It's just an enabling tool. And so there's always going to be something else, but then machine learning is going to help power that other system or help make solving that problem that much easier. So there are a lot of really cool technologies, honestly, that I get excited about, even 3D printing of clothing, of garments. It's super cool. There's a lot that's going on. And we talk about these new technologies as if they're already in people's daily lives. I think unless I'm totally misinformed, a lot of these technologies are still, they're still being built out. They're still not perfect. You're not going to find them on a regular daily basis if you're just an average person. So it's going to take time for them to really come and have a significant presence in our lives. And when they do, we won't even feel it, right? Like once it's there fully, we won't even blink.
It's amazing. I think another important thing to think about is the whole concept behind this podcast is responsible luxury and how emerging technologies and luxury industries are positively shaping local communities, global communities, and also the future. So I think it's important for leaders to be mindful about not just creating an app for the sake of creating an app, but really being mindful about what you're producing, responsible consumption, production, and asking yourself, is what I'm building really going to help benefit society or help advance the industry or future generations in some positive way? And if the answer is a full body yes, then you need to go for it. And I know that's exactly how you felt before you started Arete. But said a lot, but it's a crazy time we're in. It's absolutely crazy. It's like the Wild West with technology because you're seeing technology touching almost everything. at a very, very rapid pace. So thinking about the next 5 to 10 years with Arrayit, what impact do you hope that you guys will have on the fashion industry? And of course, I know you guys are working a lot with emerging designers, but what's your long-term, short to long-term vision?
Well, long-term, we want to be the best, most efficient personalized shopping experience for the best products in the world, right? So that is a very broad statement, but essentially, you can see in the long term, there could be even category expansion. But I think for us, when I close my eyes and think about Arrayit in 5 years or even 10 years, I want us to be a pillar in the space. I want us to be not just a company that made a lot of money, right? I want Arrayit to be a company that had a lot of impact, a company that actually helped take some of these amazing designers and help them grow, help them get to the next steps, helped consumers really discover these products and built a community around fashion for people who truly are passionate about the space. Again, I mentioned this community element because I've noticed it's really important to the company, and I see that continuing to be important in the next 5 to 10 years. And I think for us, we'll continue to refine our product. We see ourselves very much integrating body scanning, facial scanning software, right, to further refine the personalization of your recommendations. As these virtual try-on companies fight it out, we'll see who wins, and then we'll plug and play with that. We really want to be the best place for you to discover the next big thing in fashion, like the most efficient, exciting, fun, community-oriented place to go to find what is coming next, right? At least for me, I struggled because I would go on, again, like a Moda or an Essence, and I'd have to scroll through all these products. I'd have to click through all these links, and it just really never obviously understood me and the brands. Also, there are some emerging designers, there are some that are not so emerging, and the narrative around what the value prop there has also shifted over time. And so for us, we really just want to be the best place for you to discover the next big thing in fashion and do it in the most efficient, personalized, enjoyable way possible.
I have no doubt, because you guys are some incredible women leading and heading the company into a new territory, a new space. I can't wait to see what you guys are going to be building moving forward. I wanted your views on responsible luxury. As we're coexisting in this fashion tech ecosystem, how do you think Arrayit contributes to this whole concept of responsible luxury?
I love this question because, to be totally transparent, when I first started Arrayit, I was kind of ignorant to what was responsible luxury. Right. Like, I knew sustainability, but I had a gap in knowledge. And the more that we've progressed, all of our brands, just about all of our brands are sustainable. And that's something now that we look for. So we ask our brands now, are you a sustainable brand? And they're all in the affordable luxury space, if that's a term we want to use. They're kind of in that, they're not like the like Dior's of the world.
Inspirational and attainable.
Exactly. Aspirational brands, attainable, high quality materials, pieces that you're not going to throw out after a couple months, pieces that have a story. And I think for us, it's something that I've done a ton of focus groups with users, and consumers will say that they want things to be sustainable. But when push comes to shove, when you see how are you spending your money, that's not actually how it goes. And so at the end of the day, what that means, it's the responsibility of companies like ours and companies that are emerging or have emerged, or the big companies too, to really take that initiative. And for us, it's almost a no-brainer. The brands we work with, but also the way that we engage our users, Arrayit has been very gamified in the direction of sustainability. Unintentionally, honestly, in the beginning, but as you engage like on Arrayit, you can save looks, things that you're looking to shop, to buy. You can add your own items to see what you might buy with something you own. You can engage with your friends in their closets. And that allows you to be more conscientious about your purchase decisions, about what you're buying, how often are you buying. You're still going to buy, and why not make it so that the products you're buying are the best products and you're doing it in a thoughtful way. So again, that's my view on the question on the sustainable luxury, because we do work with amazing products and we are naturally inherently have from the foundation been built as a sustainable company.
And that consumers aren't going to know what to demand. It's the responsibility of the brands and the companies themselves to educate the consumer and let them know what they need to ask for, because they're not going to know what to ask for if it's not out there or if it's not already created. So if you could visually depict the ideal state for the fashion and tech industry for the whole world to see, whether it was a marketing campaign or a big billboard in the middle of Times Square, or maybe perhaps this is an ad that's going to be looked back at 20, 30 years from now, what would it say and what would it represent? What would you want to communicate to the next generation?
Can I paint almost a Wild West? Not yes. A Wild West, but a utopian society for fashion?
Absolutely.
So, all right, I'm just going to go wild here. So yeah. I would love for everyone in their homes to be able to have almost like, instead of a closet, you have a virtual mirror or something. And every morning that you need to get dressed, every time that you need to go shopping or buy something, you can go and stand in front of that mirror and it fits on you. You don't have to try anything on. I don't have to really lift a finger. And
it'd be amazing.
It just like has the perfect everything, right? Just on that mirror, I see myself in it. And then if I like something, I can just wave a finger. I'm painting a really magic world, okay? I told you, I love magic. But I lift my finger and...
Oh, I ask this question.
My closet like spits out that look, right? Or if it's something that I want to buy, I lift a finger or whatever. Maybe I have like a chip in my finger that's like my card and I purchase it. And obviously we love fast delivery. So maybe like my little drone arrives to my window in the next hour or so or faster with the products that I just purchased in that mirror. And something else that I've been thinking about a lot lately. So this is like when I'm talking about, maybe I watch too much sci-fi, but I like to think that Arete is building for that type of magical future. And I understand that to get to that type of magical universe in fashion, you have to start with the foundation. And so that's, you know, we're starting with that foundation. Mm-hmm. I also would love for us as a company, this is something I started thinking about a lot recently, but you know, we're capturing this information about your tastes and preferences and everything. And how unfortunate is it that you've spent all this time and we understand your tastes, but then you leave Arete and that's it. Like you go somewhere else to shop and they don't understand you. So I would love for down the road when we have enough customers, enough users, everyone almost has like an Arete card. So think of the way that you have Apple Pay, you have almost like your fashion card. So when you go to, and it stores your fashion data, right, that you've been just compiling naturally on Arete, and you go to any marketplace, any store, live or digital, and you scan that, and then it pulls up everything from that store that is recommended for you. So you don't have to go through this tedious process of searching through a digital or a real store, because you know, just your natural engagement with the fashion ecosystem of Arete. You're almost like a fashion credit card.
Love or
a fashion data card. So I want a fashion data card. Obviously, it takes some time for us to get there, but these are some of the ideas that I think about and some of the ways that I don't know if I'll be around to see those days. I hope so. So I see a lot of really, really wild things happening in this industry, because fashion's not going anywhere. And it's going to be so cool to see how now we're kicking off the beginning of those changes. That's honestly how I view this next decade of fashion technology. It really feels like we are now kicking off and planting the seeds for this entire revolution in the industry and the next century plus.
It's an intuitive future in a way. And I love hearing about what's going on inside your mind about where things are heading. And this has been a wonderful journey talking with you today and learning more about Arete. I respect you so much as a female founder and someone who's positively shaping the space. And I know there's going to be many more times we'll be collaborating and working together, whether that's with Arete and Laurenti or what may have you. Are there any last minute comments or closing remarks that you wanted to leave with the audience today?
I would just say building a company, if everyone who had a good idea built a company, everyone would be an entrepreneur because everyone has a million great ideas.
Yeah.
Right. And I think it's something I've come back to a lot, that if you decide that you want to build something, that this is the path for you, there's no such thing as like one foot in, one foot out. I think in order to really do something great, to do it well, and for me, anything that is worth doing, you better do it well. If you decide to build something, go all in. Or don't do it yet. It's not the right time. I just think that in entrepreneurship, there's no space for
haphazardly something.
Exactly. And maybe that's just the way my brain works. When I decide to do something and I commit to something,
you're all in.
I'm all in, like head first. Exactly. All or nothing. I joke. I always say, so funny. I forgot who said this and it stuck with me. But it's like, I'm either, maybe it was Elon Musk. That's so embarrassing. I hope I'm not quoting Elon. No hate on Elon, but like I read his biography a little while ago. And I think he said, he was like, I'm either going to be very wealthy or homeless, basically. It's two extremes. Yeah. And I've been a very extreme person my whole life. And that resonated with me so deeply because the way that I approach life, it's either all or nothing. And, you know, maybe that's not the best advice for everyone who wants to be an entrepreneur. You don't have to do that. You know, that's not necessarily the mindset for everyone. But I guess what I'm trying to get at is when you decide to do something, do it fully, don't half-ass it, be committed and really test it.
Yeah. Nuggets of wisdom and gold there. I think that is synonymous with a lot of entrepreneurs because they have an appetite for risk. And that risk, if the timing is right, it's going to take you to amazing heights or you might lose it all. So it's the balancing of scales. And I'm exactly the same way with you, where it's like, it's like sink or swim, right? It's like all or nothing. And I look forward to joining you in your entrepreneurial journey. We work adjacently between fashion and jewelry. So really excited for that. So Katrina, I'm going to link the Arete app in the show notes below, but where is the best place for people to find you and follow and connect with you to keep up with the work that you're doing?
Yeah. So you can download Arete in the App Store, Arete, fashion. Sometimes you have to put both words in. And then you can check out our Instagram and TikTok, Arete_AI. And then you can also check out our website, which is Arete4you. So Arete4you.com. We'll eventually buy the Arete.com domain. So if anyone has any hookups, let me know. And then you can subscribe for a newsletter that way as well. So on the website, you can subscribe for the newsletter. So you'll be in the loop about all of our upcoming events, which happen every month, and amazing new designers that are joining and all those great updates.
Amazing. Katrina, I wanted to thank you so much for coming on today and spending this time with us. I definitely want to have you on the show again soon and see where everything is. Thank you so much for sharing all of your insights. And I know the audience is going to get a lot of new understandings of how the intricacies of the New York fashion tech scene work. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Thank you for having me, Lauren. And Lauren, you are also crushing as an entrepreneur. Your jewelry is beautiful. And if anyone hasn't checked out Laurenti, you are missing out. I am dreaming about those emerald earrings still to this day. So you should definitely check out Lauren and Laurenti. Very, very talented.
Thank you. I'll see you soon.
Okay. Thanks, Lauren. Bye.
Thank you so much for listening to the Responsible Luxury Podcast. If you haven't already, please rate and subscribe to the show on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts. If you have any questions you want answered or ideas to share, please reach out to us at Responsible Luxury Pod or connect with me directly. And don't forget to follow at Responsible Luxury Pod for the latest updates.
I will talk to you soon. Bye for now.